Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
I am psyched to introduce you to your hosts for tonight. Eric Eddings and Brittany Luce are the co-hosts of For Colored Nerds, a podcast that started in Eric's Bed-Stuy kitchen nearly 2 years ago. And we are honored to have them on stage tonight for their very first sold-out live show. So give them all the love you have, Brittany and Eric.
Literally too kind.
Yeah. It's like you guys think we're Arsenio.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Eric.
And I'm Brittany.
And we are
For Colored Nerds.
The conversations that black people have
when white people are not in the room.
I mean, we've done it all the time.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
You know.
But we record them and we put them on the internet.
Yes, yes, yes. And we're really excited to have you all here tonight. Thank you so much. Can't say thank you enough.
We can't say thank you enough, seriously. This is our very first live show ever. And we have a lot of good stuff planned.
Yes, yes. We're going to play some games. We're going to have two amazing guests. We have Ashley Ford, amazing writer. Yes, give it up for Ashley.
Yes.
We also have Van Newkirk II. Yes.
Yes.
And we need to shout out the amazing DJ Grandrew. Yeah.
DJ Grandrew.
Who will be helping us out.
I guess before we jump into that, though.
Yes, we should tell you a little bit about how we got started.
Okay, so in November 2013, which is my birth month, we ended up sitting at this cigar bar after my birthday party for, 5 hours?
Yeah,
and we just 5 hours just sitting in these overstuffed chairs next to this fireplace that had no fire in it, and we had a conversation that didn't have any interruption, no extra people, no breaks, no nothing.
It was very uncomfortable. We talked about our goals, we talked about music, we talked about movies, just all the important stuff.
We talked about how the world is a white supremacist, cis heteropatriarchy.
Yes, the huge, if you will. But a couple weeks later, I was like, so Brittany, we should start a podcast.
And I was like, nobody's going to listen to this because the read already exists. Yes. We have Audie Cornish. We don't need this.
But I argued a little bit more. I did some convincing. Mm-hmm. And after a few bumps in the road, we started our podcast in September of 2014.
And we called it For Colored Nerds, and which is a name that we lovingly adapted from the Ento Zake Shange play for colored girls who have considered suicide when the rainbow is enough. Wow, yes. This is a room where people say that with you.
Family. but we recorded our first three episodes and we sent them to family and friends. Surprisingly, the feedback was good.
It was positive.
So we kept going.
And at the beginning of last year, we actually decided to put the podcast on iTunes, and then it kind of took off from there.
Yeah, I mean, I can't say it enough. Doing this show has quite literally changed our lives. We actually have new jobs.
Yes, no. Eric is a development producer at Gimlet Media.
Yes. Thank you.
Got some fire coming this fall. Got some hot fire coming this fall.
And Brittany, as you all should know, is the host of the amazing show Sampler at Gimlet Media.
Okay. Literally, we are friends. we make this show and we go to work every day to see each other. Like,
it's too much.
It's unhealthy.
Yeah.
but, you know, doing For Colored Nerds also allows us to talk to people who we really admire, and we really, really love it because we get to connect with all of you. So we really, really just want to say thank you so much.
But before we go into like a full like 3-hour testimony, I think we should do something fun. How about a game?
Sounds good.
Oh man. Wow, that was great.
No, it's like so effective.
Where did that where did that music come from?
Yeah.
So we're gonna play a game called, are you ready?
I'm ready.
6 degrees of black separation. All right, so how I came up with this, so, you know.
It's not like a Milton Bradley board game.
Yeah, you can't go by it. But I have a theory that all black people are connected. I actually probably think that all of us are cousins.
That is feasible.
Which makes things awkward, but, you know, for tonight it's gonna work. You're gonna bear with me. But Brazitney.
I like that. That was good.
That's fly, right? It sounds like
the spirit of Snoop Lion is upon us today.
Yeah. I'm gonna present you with two celebrities. And you are going to have to guess the 5.
I am playing the game.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're playing it?
All right. Okay.
Why are we not? I mean,
I'm fine.
Okay. All right. I'm going to present you with 2 celebrities, and you are going to have to guess the 5 connections that would take us from point A to point B. Are you ready?
Okay. All right. I'm ready.
All right. Yeah. You can, if things get like really bad and boring, you can ask the audience.
Okay. So this is like phone a friend.
Yes. Well, not too much.
Anybody that I would call is probably in this room right now. All right.
So to start, let me tell you who we're going to connect.
Okay.
We're going to start with the amazing, let's see. Whoops. Wrong button. Halle Berry.
Okay.
All right. One of the goats. Really enjoy her work, maybe save for Catwoman, but you know, great actress, no shade. And we're gonna be connecting her to Kendrick Lamar. It's very.
One person believes in
me. Yeah. I'm not sure I do, but we're gonna get there because we literally have to.
It's true.
All right, so we're gonna start with Halle Berry, and the goal is to think of like, you know, who she might know or worked with that would get us to Kendrick Lamar.
Okay.
All right, so
my blood pressure is like.
Are you ready? Can you? Okay. Who should we start with? You're really killing this game. All right, I'll give you a hint.
It's all black people in between.
It's all black people in between. It's for color nerds.
Eric Benet.
It's not Eric Benet. It is. Are you ready?
Okay. Wait. So you're gonna give me the you're gonna give me the first one.
I mean,
and then I'm gonna tumble forward.
Yeah, we're gonna like roll through this.
This is recorded. Y'all can't be in here acting like this.
All right.
This is not Comic View. Like.
All right. We're gonna get there. Okay. Halle Berry is connected. We're gonna start. She is connected to Eddie Murphy.
Okay.
We talked about this before.
Okay, we have
on the show.
About this before. We have.
All right, Boomerang. So
Boomerang.
As you know, Halle Berry was in the amazing film, if I do say so myself.
Okay.
Boomerang.
Right.
With Eddie Murphy.
Okay.
Okay.
So this is good. Eddie Murphy's good. Eddie Murphy's like a gateway black.
Yes.
Connected to all of the others.
Correct.
Okay.
All right, so, let's see. I think we can go for it one more time. Okay, so okay, we have so Halle Berry to Eddie Murphy. All
this right. It's like his Bowfinger face.
Now.
All right. I need to get from Eddie Murphy to another person.
To another person,
so Eddie
yes.
Murphy is like, I'm down to 4.
Correct. Yes, that's
okay.
the math
so
works.
Eddie Murphy to get to another person. So like, okay, so let's like, let's go. Let's try. Okay, so let's think.
Okay.
So like,
This was faster in my mind.
If anybody was going to set me up for failure.
It would be you.
Literally, it would be you.
Okay.
Okay, so Eddie Murphy. He was in If y'all don't stop talking, I'm dead ass serious. I will come out there and shake you. This is my. Like, I earned this. Y'all need to stop.
This is every day for me, guys.
This is every day.
All right. Okay. So, are you ready? Do you want me to give you this one? You got it?
No. Okay, so like Eddie Murphy, so he's a movie actor, so we need to think movies.
Correct.
Movies. Okay, so are you thinking of a particular film?
Like, I am thinking of a particular film.
Okay, all right. Okay, so we're right now, so Eddie Murphy, 90s was when he was popping.
90s, this is good. You're getting warm.
Okay.
Let's keep it going.
Okay.
We should have got a doom doom, like what's it?
Doom. Okay. So Bowfinger was 2000. Any of the clumps.
No. Not on this show.
Can you give me a co-star?
A co-star. I think it's gonna give it away.
Give me the damn co-star. I still got three more black people to go.
All right. For sake of time, Angela Bassett is a co-star, not the
Vampire in Brooklyn.
That is correct. Vampire in Brooklyn.
Told you to give me a co-star.
Some would say a classic. I wouldn't say that.
Who is
but,
some?
But it's a good movie, you know. Hey. But Eddie Murphy starred in Vampire in Brooklyn with Angela Bassett. In addition to that, he starred with Kadeem Hardison.
That was Kadeem Hardison. We have no prizes, but I will give you an open bag of tortilla chips.
Yes, we have plenty of those.
I got a jar of salsa also.
Kadeem Hardison, who's probably better known as Dwayne Wayne. And if we could pause for a moment, take a look at this picture. Which is so
Jesse
tragic.
Is standing.
Yeah. I don't understand.
Her extension is nice.
It's just the most uncomfortable pose. Like, for both of them, they both look very confused.
You and Bae don't do this?
No. I mean, that's a different
show. After you get married, and it's like, that's what, you know.
We do have a kid. But, okay. So, Kadeem Hardison.
So, like, okay.
This narrows the field. It should.
Okay. What was he in? The Sixth Man?
I mean, he was in A Different World.
He was in A Different World.
But he might have also been in films. He might also just know people. He might have been in relationships.
Okay, wait, question. So we're crossing over from...
We might be transitioning...
To personal.
Out of work into personal.
Okay, so a part of me feels like he used to date Cree Summer.
Well, he might have.
I think that was just
in the show.
And then... No, I do a deep Instagram stalk of all the people from A Different World every few months. And I think that's something I learned. So it's not Cree Summer.
It's not Cree Summer.
Okay.
The cult.
Give me another clue.
Shit, I didn't really prepare clues. let me see.
That's obvious.
This was a very, very, like, their connection was very popular for a time.
Give me a clue about the other person.
That was a clue.
People paid to come. We gotta move along.
All right. I'm gonna give you this one. You're gonna be mad at yourself. But Kadeem Hardison.
Okay.
Was in.
No, give me a clue. Give me the clue though.
You
have your hand like
there
you're
are
about
no
to.
There are no additional clues.
Okay. All right.
There's no clues. We gotta move. All right. So Kadeem Hardison was in a relationship
with
Shantae Moore. There we go.
You could have just said pettiest song of all 19 anything. And I would have been like, Shantae's got a man. I got
Very
you.
True. Very true. So, there, I mean, he
you
was the
said,
man.
You could have said counting your chickens. Because you know she's not with Kenny Lattimore anymore. What happens when you make a song about how you have a man and nobody else does.
How salty are you about Shantae?
I'm not salty. It's petty. That song was very petty.
I mean, I didn't realize you felt this.
Okay, stupid. So now how many people do I have left?
All right,
just one?
All right. So yeah. You've got Halle Berry to Eddie Murphy to Kadeem Hardison.
Okay, so I have one or two.
No, well, I mean, the last one is Kendrick Lamar. You've really only got one more.
Okay, wait. Okay, I got it.
About
we just did an episode.
We might have just
We
done
just did an episode.
Episode
about R. Kelly's like kind of like R&B hip hopers.
That is true.
Okay.
You might
be
warm.
Pimp a Butterfly. All right, I'm gonna go on
a limb. Okay.
But you said I was warm, so it's not that bad.
You're pretty warm. I mean, I think we all know.
Mr.
We
Big. Should.
Yes. Ron Isley. Which This is a great suit, by the way. Yeah. If I could do my wedding over again, this would be it. But Ron Isley, Mr. Big, so he...
Was on To Pimp a Butterfly.
Was on To Pimp a Butterfly. For, oh, I can't say that word, apparently. But,
and then we get from there...
To Kendrick Lamar, because he had the song, What a Dollar Cost. How much a dollar cost. So that takes us to Kendrick Lamar. Good job, Brittany. You made it.
I made it.
You made it.
Yeah, I appreciate... I mean, this was like...
We got from Halle Berry to Kendrick Lamar. And that has been 6 degrees of black separation. Woo! Like, wow.
So how many of y'all really could have called this game? I heard a lot of people out here whispering.
I mean, a lot of people out here whispering. They
were not easy.
It was pretty easy.
How many people are thinking about Kadeem Hardison and Shantae Moore still in 2016?
I mean, that was a big relationship.
She
one of her biggest hits was about the fact she had a man, and he was the man. Yeah.
Kenny Lattimore was the man, I thought.
No, I think that was before.
Look, we don't have Google here to verify any of this.
Well, so
we're just gonna leave it open ended. Right. But yeah, we're gonna keep it moving.
Yes.
We actually would like to introduce our very first guest. So she is a writer and editor who's been published like just about everywhere. She's also now a development executive at Matter Studios, and she is the host of the Authorized podcast for Audible. She also has an obsession with Kenny Loggins.
Yes.
Please welcome to the stage, Ashley Fort.
All right, so, Ashley, so glad to have you.
Yes. I'm so glad to be here.
Yes. And so, just to jump into it, mm-hmm. You have been a writer and an editor for a long time. You've worked at BuzzFeed and Elle, and we know you've been working on, like, multiple books for the past few years.
Yeah, lots going on.
Yeah. You busy.
I'm busy. I'm booked. Is that what they say?
Yeah.
I think so.
Am I making that up?
Through next year?
Yeah.
So I would love for you to tell us just a little bit more about how you kind of transitioned from a writer to a development executive. Because it's pretty new.
Yeah, it's new.
And just tell us about the new job.
Okay. My new job is working for a company called Matter Studios that used to be a publication online, just like a digital publication. And the editorial director for the publication had this vision for like a full media company that would basically be a great place for people to make bold and sometimes specific things that don't have a like super wide audience, or that other companies always say doesn't have a wide audience, and to do that in a way that was, you know, actually beneficial to creators and artists. And he took that vision to somebody with a lot of money, and that person was like, yeah, sounds like a good idea, and gave him a bunch of money to start this company. And I was actually, before taking this job, I was consulting for Condé Nast, and he, like the founder, Mark Lotto, well, it's him and his wife who founded it, him and Hillary Fry, but Mark was actually reaching out to me about something different. And he was like, okay, I've tried to be respectful of your little thing at Condé Nast, but I really want you to come work for me. So can you do that? And I was like, I was just waiting for you to ask. So now I do that. And I'm specifically working with web series and documentaries. So just like basically right now having a lot of meetings with people who have cool ideas and trying to figure out if they have the right cool idea right now for us, and if it's not the right cool idea for us right now, it might be later. And so just having as many conversations as possible with people who are making really amazing stuff or who want to.
Sounds awesome.
That sounds actually, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's kind of a dream job. Like, I keep thinking it's not real. Like, I show up every day and I like look around like, y'all still want me here, right?
Yeah.
Y'all want me to do the same stuff I was doing yesterday? Okay. Just making sure.
It's me every day.
I'm always waiting for somebody to just like to bring a cane and just like yank it around. Yeah. Like, a vaudeville cat.
Yeah.
From a cartoon. Something.
Yes. And not yet. Like, I mean, they keep checking in with me to make sure that like I'm doing okay and I'm happy, you know, and that I feel like I'm supported when, you know, when shit went down in Louisiana and in Minneapolis and then in Dallas, you know, they were kind of calling me and being like, hey, you don't have to come in tomorrow. like, maybe.
That's great.
It's great.
Well, I mean, I can't, like, have you sitting here without addressing the episode for Colored Nerds that you did last summer.
Yeah.
It's been almost, like, exactly a year. And it's honestly, it's a fan favorite. Even people in my personal life who, like, barely listen to the show, they're always like, this woman, Ashley Ford, we need to have her back. And that conversation was actually also the first interview that, like, I ever did. And you kind of have this, like, sage wisdom vibe about you. And you're always, like, giving really good advice. And I think, like, in that episode specifically, you spoke a lot about, like, gaining the courage and vulnerability to, like, really put yourself out there, whether it's, like, emotionally or for your work. And that, like, meant a lot to me, also to Eric, and I think to a lot of our listeners.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, the thing is you're, like, 30?
Yeah. Well, I will be 30 in about 6 months, yes.
Right. So the thing is, though, is when you talk, you sound like Cicely Tyson in that family reunion scene from Madea.
Wait a minute. No.
Wait, but how do you do that?
I listened to my grandmother a lot, took her to heart. I mean, I don't think, I always say that it's kind of because I'm a Capricorn.
shout out Zodiac.
And Capricorns in general, like, you know, whether you, like, people don't believe in that stuff, it's totally fine. But the thing about Capricorns is that we really don't like to be misunderstood. And so we try to make ourselves as clear as possible. And I feel like my whole life I've been trying to say what I mean. And that takes practice, like a lot of fucking practice. Oh, are we allowed to cuss?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Sorry.
I think we may already.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
A few times.
But yeah, it takes a lot of fucking practice to sort of like every time you talk, try to do so with the intention of clarity, which means talking in a way that, in my mind, is to the point, and also in a way that I try not to get too caught up in how I want to speak. I try to think about the message and who I want to receive the message, and how they would best receive the message. And I try to speak to people in a way that is already a bridge, and that I can say something to them that is the way they can best receive it, and not necessarily just the way I like to talk or the way that I talk when I'm, you know, with my family or friends or, you know, whatever. And it's not necessarily like a different identity. It's more so like trying to figure out where you're coming from. And every time I have a conversation, it's not like, oh, I'm just talking at people. I'm talking with people.
That's like doing the thing that like most people do that I don't always do. Like when I'm communicating, which is like actually like taking in what someone is saying,
yeah.
And then like thoughtfully responding.
Well, I understand. Like I don't always get it right. Like I mean, I definitely don't always get it right. And the more someone is around me, the more they will catch me fucking up, to be perfectly honest. You know, my boyfriend's here tonight, and I guarantee you he'll be like, yeah, she fucks up sometimes. Like, you know, like, it's not all the time. It's just, you know, I try to use sometimes the best of myself when communicating with people. And the best of myself is the part of me that wants to connect with the person, you know, by any means necessary.
Do you feel like you always, like when do you feel like you hit a moment where you started to trust that person to know that, like, this is the best of yourself?
That is ongoing. that is not a thing that I feel like I inherently trust about myself, or that I got to one point and felt like I could trust myself. I think it was more of a not being scared to try, and doing it over and over again. And when I mess up, recognizing it and not letting the, I don't want to say a failure, but in a little way, it feels that way. It feels like a little failure mm-hmm. in the moment. And it's okay for it to be a little failure, but the failure has no purpose if I don't learn from it. So when I mess up, or when I, you know, have those moments, I think it's not so much that I trust myself to get it right, but I do trust myself to recognize when I don't get it right and to make amends accordingly.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Can sure say amen.
That's not something that's going to come up with.
So, I mean, one of the, like, in the episode that you sat down with us before, with Brittany before, mm-hmm. one of the things you talked about was your series, Disrupting Domesticity.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think, I know Brittany is a huge fan of.
Yeah, it was on the Toast.
Yeah.
It was this, like, series on the Toast where you talked about, like, you did something that I, like, could never do. And I think that would be hard for a lot of people, which is talk, like, write a monthly post about what it was like to move in with your partner for the first time. Mm-hmm. And like, you laid the shit bare. Like, you talked about,
yeah.
Like, I mean, you talked about everything, like the kind of stuff that goes through everybody's mind. Like, is this person going to eventually find me boring? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, am I caring enough about this person? Do they feel it? Am I too depressed or anxious for this person? Like, I mean, you kept it 100.
I tried. I certainly tried.
Yeah, so I mean, I feel like we read a lot that it's important to have healthy relationships, but like Brittany was saying, I feel like you really did the work of showing your work, mm-hmm. if you will, and kind of outlining how you got there. So, to put you on the spot a little bit,
oh Lord,
how are things going? And also, if you had to, like, let's say, if you were thinking of creating a new installment, like, what's been on your mind? Like, what do you think is important to share?
It's so funny that you say that, because I have been thinking about it a lot, because when Kelly moved here, he moved into an apartment that I already was in with a roommate. So it was the three of us Ooh. In an apartment for, a year and a half, maybe a little. I don't know if it was a year and a half, but a little over a year. Sometimes I feel like we bonded in like our shared, like, you know, we gotta get the fuck out of here. You know what I mean? Like, I think sometimes that was it. But we just recently, as in like June 15th, moved into our own place, just the two of us, and it's been hard. Like, it's been hard. It's been, like, you know, very interesting figuring out, like, communicating with each other as, like, we move into a place and I start a new job and, you know, a million other things are going on all the time. We have to furnish this place, you know? We have to figure out, like, travel stuff. We're, like, doing a million things at once. And it's, like, it's in the truest sense, being partners, like really partners. And it's tough. It's so tough. But it's also like this thing where sometimes I'm sitting on the couch and he's sitting on the other end of the couch and we're like watching Avengers again. and that's not him. That's me. Like, who picked Avengers again? And I look over at him. And, like, he's got one hand on my leg and, like, one hand on, like, a beer. And he's watching the movie and he's laughing and he's looking at me, too. And I just feel like, holy fuck, I live with my best friend. And I get to see him every day. And he's so thoughtful. Like, he knows I'm, like, stressed out. So, like, I wake up the next day and he, like, cuddles me a little longer and he kisses me and immediately starts saying, you're so beautiful, you're so smart, I love you so much, from the minute I wake up. And that's not every day. But, like, on particularly hard days, you know, like, I get to have those moments with this person who is, like, who is kind and who is patient. And, you know, after a couple of like relationships that went bad, and I was just thinking, you know, what do I want from the next relationship? The thing that kept coming to my mind is that I want to be with someone who knows how to be gentle with themselves. And that is really hard for men. To be gentle with themselves. And when they're not good at being gentle with themselves, it is like such a learning curve to learn to be gentle to someone else or with someone else, no matter who it is. And I did not want to be with another person who like had so much misery or self-hate or, you know, like just so like ridiculously hard on themselves that they didn't know or they couldn't maintain a relationship that was shared kindness. I didn't want that again. So now I'm with someone who is like so kind, not just to me, but to everyone in his life, that I'm regularly astounded by how kind he is. And it feels like a challenge. And I'm not a competitive person, but it feels like a challenge to live with him and to see the things that he thinks of and the kind of man that he wants to be. And every day I have to be like, I at least have to match that. And it's fun trying.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It sounds like really beautiful.
Yeah, I know. I mean, one of the things you said actually, I mean, that really kind of just stuck out to me was like, in terms of men being gentle with themselves, like,
it's,
I know.
It's hard.
Yeah, it's really difficult. I find it really difficult.
Mm-hmm.
thanks, Brittany. But no, I was going to say, I mean, obviously Carla, my wife and I,
Carla.
Yeah.
I love her. I know her and I love her. Sorry.
Me too.
Me three.
But we're two very different people, and I'm the type of person that just like enjoys debate and enjoys like to argue.
Mm-hmm.
And she is like the opposite. And like the thing that I really kind of realize is that sometimes when you are so steeped into like enjoying that debate, it's less about the outcome.
Yeah.
It's more about that process. And that was, I kind of think, something that kind of falls in line with that.
Well, yeah, you know, one of the like rules that we try to abide by during arguments and stuff like that is we are not arguing, neither of us is arguing to win, we're arguing to find a solution to the problem. And that helps because when you're not arguing to win, you don't go for the jugular. You don't, like, there's no reason to, because you're not trying to, like, you know, get this person to submit. You're trying to get this person to, like, partner with you and figure out what's next after this. And that has worked for us. Like, that really, really helps. Sometimes it's like we have to get out of the house and just, like we don't like each other right now, but we've got to get out of the house and go do something. Because that's what's going to shake us out of this. One time it was getting on the train and going, like, we were like, let's just get on the train and go somewhere. And we went to, like, Connecticut, and we didn't really think this through. And we, but it was great because we ended up, like, getting off the train and walking around and being like, yo, I hate this place. Me too. And then being like, let's eat something and leave immediately. You know, like... It ended up being great because it was like, it was just this moment of being like, we're in a place where we know no one. It's just the two of us. This place blows. And it reminds me how much I like you, to be perfectly honest. And it was, I mean, it went like, but it went great. Like, it was a lot of, you know, like, we talk about that trip a lot because even now it's like, why the fuck did we go to Connecticut? Like, I don't know why we did that, but we did.
That's great. So I think it's time for another guest.
Yes.
So I would like to introduce this person. Surprise. He is a writer at The Atlantic. He is also a contributing editor for Seven Scribes and a founding member of Negroes with a Podcast. He's also, most importantly, the founder of Durag History Week. Yes. Give it up. Please welcome Van Newkirk II.
Oh, welcome, Van. Oh, they came from DC at 6 o'clock this morning.
That's commitment.
And like worked. And like is here right now, so thank you.
6:55, not that.
Yeah. Well, I came from Williamsburg, so yeah. It's kind of the same.
Same distance.
All right, well, Van, you used to actually work as a policy analyst for Kaiser Family Foundation, which is not the same as being a journalist. But now you're a writer for The Atlantic, and you're covering everything from the economy of Puerto Rico to why American English needs to retain y'all. To the greatness of Muhammad Ali. You the rooter to the tutor, you're covering everything. Mm-hmm. You also started your own site with six of your friends called Seven Scribes, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. If you guys haven't read it, you should. You guys have a new piece out about Cousin Pam.
Cousin Pam from the Cosby Show.
Oh, it's so good.
Yes.
But how did you get from, Kaiser Permanente to The Atlantic?
Well, when I was at Kaiser, I was also freelancing, mm-hmm. and I was blogging. And I think Ferguson was a moment in which I decided that I needed to make that my actual life and career. People were dying, and I was crunching numbers every day. And it didn't feel right. And I was writing from 5 to 9 and working from 9 to 5. And when I was writing about how I felt and how I felt like I was watching America change. And it felt irresponsible. It just felt depressing to actually go to work and crunch numbers on uninsured people every day. And it was a job that I was trained for, but I don't think it was a job I was meant to do. Mm. And I feel like with journalism, after I freelanced for a little bit of time, people were looking out. And I went to Daily Kos for a couple months. Mm-hmm. And from there, I actually got into The Atlantic by critiquing The Atlantic a lot. So that was fun.
Say more about that.
Yeah.
So The Atlantic, I'm pretty sure a lot of people here have seen the coddling of the American mind. There's a couple of pieces, not a couple, quite a few pieces, that deal with this idea of PC culture on college campuses and the idea that safe spaces are bad and that mostly minority students and queer students are damaging the foundations of free speech on college campuses. And I take issue with that almost at a personal level, but definitely at a journalistic level, because I don't think it's based on actual assessment, actually talking to students, actually going out and seeing how students feel about free speech. And so that's how I wrote, and that's what I wrote. And when I had my first lunch with Matt Thompson, he's another black guy at The Atlantic, one of a few. And that was one of the first things he brought up was, I saw you've been writing a lot of stuff about us. Yeah. It's a good way to get people's attention, right? Is talk shit about them.
So you open up to us just now about, and I can definitely actually understand the feeling of I didn't have a TV when Ferguson was happening, and so I would stay up and refresh Twitter all night, not get any sleep, go to work the next day, probably after getting up at 5 and editing before going to work, feel crazy. And then go to my day job, and nobody was talking about it. It was as if, nothing was happening whatsoever. Yeah. And then I was just like, this doesn't feel good. This doesn't feel right anymore. But this is actually a completely unrelated follow-up. Please explain Do-Rag History Week.
Oh, yeah. It's actually not unrelated. It's very much related. So November 2 years ago, we were going through this. You know, we were watching. People were marching. We were very upset and hurt. And I woke up that day, and I think you'll see the tweet directly before the Do-Rag History Week tweet. It was, we need something to we need some levity, and we need something to celebrate. And so how it started was I tweeted one tweet. It was, I'm declaring this week Do-Rag History Week. And that was it. I posted three follow-ups with an Egyptian cat with a skull cap. And there's a picture of Sammy Davis Jr., black and white, counting money in a dressing room in a do-rag. Yeah, and people, I think people really, like, they felt the same thing that I felt, that they needed some levity. They needed something to hold on to and celebrate what we are and where we've been. And it grew out of that. You know, it seems like it's a very superficial thing, but at the time of the first one, people were in tears at the beginning and at the end of what happened and how do-rag history allowed them to connect to, like, a strength about them and their history. So I thought it was really interesting. And it almost had nothing to do with me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had that tweet, and I think people would have latched on to almost anything at that point that was similar.
That's obviously, like, very relevant now, even. You know, I feel like we're all looking for things to kind of take us out, mm-hmm. yeah. just even for a brief moment.
Yeah, Pokemon Go.
Yeah.
I was playing in the green room before I came out here.
I deleted it because I have an obsessive personality and unlimited vacation. So I was like, nah, it's a recipe for disaster.
I have an obsessive personality and I just go with it.
So normally before guests come on the show, we ask them, like, is there anything that you want to talk about that you never, ever get to? And you said, without hesitation, with, like, not even half a breath, butterflies.
Yes, butterflies.
What is that about?
Wait, the Michael Jackson song?
No. Oh, I love that song, by the way. And I love the original Floetry version much better.
Yeah.
The reference track. As much as I love Michael. But I think butterflies, and this is going to be real poetic and kind of whack maybe. But I think butterflies are like the thing that I would show if an alien came to Earth and asked me to show them one thing or they blow us up. I would say butterflies. I think butterflies are beautiful manifestations of the strangeness and the weirdness and the uniqueness of life on Earth. And they remind me so much of the specialness I see in, like, kids and people. And, you know, I actually have butterfly feeders and plants that I know will attract butterflies in my yard because they're so amazing. You know, we got monarch butterflies. We got swallowtails. You know, you want to get me into talking about classifications. But if you think about it, if you actually think about the idea of a butterfly, and it's almost to me like impossible beauty of a thing. And whenever I'm down and I go out to my garden and I see butterflies landing on my hydrangeas or my,
no, this is great.
Or my daisies. I am just reminded that life is beautiful and I don't ever want to lose that.
Well, damn. That was great. Yeah. So just Monday, you put out a really, really great piece on the importance of Serena Williams. And yeah, yeah.
Yes.
And it was really beautiful in the sense of how it explored kind of Serena's life, like her success, but also her life as a bit of a metaphor for kind of the struggles that, like, Black people have traditionally gone through, in addition to Black women specifically, how they have always faced them. To start, I would actually just love it if you could just say more about that, because everybody should know.
Okay, so Serena Williams, the greatest, maybe athlete of all time, we'll think about that. Definitely the greatest tennis player of all time, the greatest athlete alive right now, I believe. She won her 22nd Grand Slam title on Saturday, tied for the most in the open era with Steffi Graf. I think pretty much any commentator will tell you she's better than Steffi Graf at this point. And it happened just hours after we watched protesters, hundreds, get arrested in Minnesota in Baton Rouge. And, you know, I was struck with her answer after the match. They asked her a question about Dallas right after the match. And without wavering, she said, this is about Black lives. This is about violence against people who look like my nephews. And she didn't do this thing where people, you know, they make two things equivalent. They make, you know, a guy, one person's agenda against police equivalent to police killing black folks. She stood there in a very precarious situation, exhausted after a match, and said the right thing. And then she walked off with a fist raised. And I've loved Serena Williams and Venus Williams for now most of my life. And, you know, I was just overcome then. Mm. Yeah. And that's what I wrote about. And she's the greatest. And she means so much to us to celebrate. She to me is like Ali in that she provides that public voice, that public excellence that we often need when we're feeling down, when we feel like, you know, maybe they won't stop killing us. Maybe they won't stop marginalizing us and redlining us and putting us on the edge of cities and in floodplains and lead poisoning us. And I think people like having those avatars of like greatness, of black excellence, who can remind us that we can, mm-hmm. and there is a future.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. And, you know, I mean, one of the things that I also think about, like, that to me feels pretty unique with Serena is, like, within the black community specifically, she seems very, like, wholly loved. Like, it's like a love relationship with her. I mean, people, like near uniformly, if not uniformly, recognize, like, how special and unique she is. And I was also, usually what we do is, like, we think about that in relation to somebody else. And I was thinking about LeBron, who's somebody who's also extremely dominant, like, very dominant. Ridiculously talented person, you know? But I feel like with him specifically, it's harder for people, like, to get behind, black people specifically. It seems to be more of a love, like, hate relationship. And I mean, I personally don't get it. I'm just curious if you had any thoughts.
I don't get the LeBron hate. And I hated LeBron for a long time. Well, I thought the whole switching, I thought the decision was weak. I thought it was, you know, something I definitely wouldn't do, get on TV and say, I'm going to leave you. Like, but when I... After a while, I felt people were piling on, and they were just ignoring the amazing things that he did. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact that he actually does do work for the community. His scholarship program is amazing. But I think anyone who becomes successful enough is going to have haters. Like, and that's just the way it is. And I think she's not singularly accepted among everyone, of course. I mean, you got Dog Abby and Egg Twitter, who get out there every day, and they're going in. But I think that acceptance among black folks, at least, is acknowledgement that she represents more than any other athlete that sort of hope, more than LeBron, more than Jordan did, mm-hmm. and the fact that I think that she exists in a sport that is mostly white, that is white, pretty much, with the exception of her sister, and a couple of other up-and-comers who also enjoy watching, is different than LeBron James playing in a sport where it's mostly black, or a football player playing in a sport where it's mostly black. You know, she's overcoming... LeBron definitely has overcome racism, but it's much more daily and present in her life, and she's also a woman. She's a black woman dealing with all the shit that black women get. So it's almost threefold, like the difference in what we respect of her going through. And that's why I think, you know, even if you don't like her, if you don't like tennis, you gotta respect Serena, right? You can't not respect Serena.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was beautiful and true. now that I guess everybody in the room has now met the both of you, it's time to move on to our next segment. So we are going to talk. We each brought, like, our own individual thing. Eric, you want to explain a little bit of it?
Yeah, I mean, it's come up a lot. It's honestly, I'm sure amongst everybody in the audience, it's kind of tough to have a conversation where the events over the past, like, week or two haven't come up. So we wanted to talk about something that feels good. And for us, that's really the kind of the transformative power of black art. So we asked ourselves, this is well as you two. what's a piece of Black art that's changed your life? And we're gonna share those with you.
All right, so I'm first.
Yeah. No pressure.
So I'm gonna play a clip from a movie, and it comes from the 1978 classic movie musical The Wiz.
Oh yeah.
We're in a period of rapid change, and sometimes it can feel like things are spinning out of control. With political tensions, anxiety, and loneliness rising, and questions about how to live a good life on everyone's mind, finding answers can seem harder than ever. For millennia, spiritual thinkers have offered wisdom and tools to help people find their way in trying times, advice that even a scientist like me, Dave DeSteno, is finding have a lot to offer. To join the conversation, look for How God Works wherever you listen to podcasts.
Feel like you got enough to do already? I do. That's why I use Shipt same-day delivery to keep up with my busy life. They know the snacks I like down to the extra creamy in my peanut butter. I can get deliveries at home, on set, or even when I'm away on vacay. And my personal shopper, Amber, she's got my back. As in, she asks them to check the back if it's not on the shelf. Shipt. Delight in every delivery. Learn more at Shipt.com/hi.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Starring Diana Ross, Michael Jackson, Richard Pryor, Lena Horne, Nipsey Russell. We could go on and on and on and on and on. So the scene you're about to see, Dorothy and her friends have just reached the Emerald City, and they are introduced to a whole new world. For The Wiz, actually.
The Wiz.
And actually, if you were like paying attention, or if you know that much about like Yves Saint Laurent models from the 70s, mm-hmm. Iman was like the very yeah. last Black person in that shot. Some of y'all do, apparently. So I picked that because, so where I grew up is a town called Farmington Hills, Michigan.
Yes! Woo!
Obviously, that person is my blood relation. Who also quickly forgot about where we come from. Because it's not that thrilling. So by the name, you can kind of guess, it's not chock full of Black people. And so like growing up, I saw very few all Black anything outside of my household, my auntie's households, and church. And so like to be like, to see this thing from the past, which like when you're 6, 7, 8, you have like a very, you don't have a strong concept of like the 70s. But to see like Michael Jackson younger and to see Diana Ross younger and all these other like just amazingly talented Black people, some of whom aren't here anymore, just like being in this thing together. Like Iman is not even from, she's not even from America, but like she, you know what I'm saying? This is like such a, like a, like The Wiz is such a, to me, a Black American triumph. But also like by including other people who are in like other, like, well, I guess like if Iman's from Africa, she's not really part of the diaspora. She's like, you know, yeah. Like, yeah, so like including people from the diaspora and people who really didn't travel as far. and it was just like, it was so beautiful. Like I had no concept of anything like that. So just to be immersed in this world that wasn't just all black, but was also like seemingly of another time and also of like this other place where there was all this magical stuff happening. And I always loved The Wizard of Oz. So to see an all black adaptation of that with better music.
Talk about it.
Better dancing. That's like, I mean, it's like, that made me feel like as a child, like I won.
Alvin Ailey.
Yeah.
And that scene, do you know what I mean? Like,
it's, yeah. I mean, honestly, it's really, like, it's amazing. Like, the thing that, like, for me, and I went back and watched The Wiz after The Wiz Live play recently, which was also really, really good.
I watched Amber that. Riley. I cried.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen The Wiz Live, you need to go on Hulu or whatever bootleg website you use. And you need to watch, what is it? He's the Wiz. When Amber Riley sings He's the Wiz at the beginning, like the first time I saw that, I was crying. And it turned out, I talked to, not to put my mama on blast, my mom is in the room. But when I talked to her about that, whoop, whoop, Ursula. but when I talked to her about it, she said that she cried when she saw it. Almost every other black woman that I know that watched The Wiz burst into tears.
Yeah.
At seeing it live, and then also seeing Amber Riley sing that song.
I mean, first of all, Amber Riley hits notes I didn't know existed, and like regularly, and I just love that. But it's also so infrequent to see. I'm a person who grew up loving anything that had to do with magic and whimsy. Like, I loved it, loved it, loved it. But that also meant that I ended up seeing like mostly, like, except for really like The Wiz, seeing white people being able to engage in like magic and whimsy and things like that. So The Wiz was this like view into like it's colorful and they're singing and they're dancing, you know what I mean? But it's also like literally about magic. And that was like life altering for me. Like, oh, we get to do magic too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm from Indiana, so for many years I didn't think Harlem was a real place. Like all of a sudden in movies, it was like the 555 number in movies. Like when people would be like, "Oh, we're in Harlem," and I would be like, "Oh yes, Harlem." Like it was a concept. It wasn't an actual location.
I mean, but in the movie, Harlem is also like, I mean, as they go to the different world, like that world just has so much texture and detail.
Yes.
Like if you think about like, I mean, black, like, one, you don't see many black, like I guess you call it maybe sci-fi or fantasy, like, like you say, kind of those like magical worlds. But it was not only that, but it was also just built out with so much depth and detail. Mm-hmm. Like if you look at the, like if you, like that clip alone, like just all the details from the fur to like the metallics and like how they bring all those things together, it was so much focus to create, to make you really feel like this was opulence, like this was, you know, luxury, this was at its peak. And like that's something I feel like we still, frankly, don't see a lot of times because we don't get the budgets. But
the budget for The Wiz was incredible.
Yeah.
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 It's clear.
Did they blow it? I feel like they blew it out a couple of times.
I wouldn't be surprised.
But yeah, no, it was like,
I feel like the budget for Boomerang was probably high too.
Was super high. They like blew it out. But also like Eddie, it's like not crazy, but it's also just, I mean, time has passed, but it's crazy to think about like Eddie Murphy like commanding that kind of money, or like Diana Ross and Michael Jackson together with Richard Pryor like commanding that type of money. Like I was glad that it was a thing that happened again now, and that like I was happy that Neo was in it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Right. Like I was really Neo's a talent. I've been singing "Sexy Love" to myself for like 10 years, walking around my office just.
His accent was terrible, though.
What's that?
His accent was terrible. He's like the only black person I know with Jack Nicholson eyebrows. I don't know how I feel about it.
Where's he from?
What's that?
Where's he from, Neo?
The Shining.
Somebody said Vegas. I was gonna be like, "Who said The Shining?"
I swear he's never been to the South.
Yeah, I really do.
He tries it. He tries it.
He did. He really did.
But I like it because it's centered like the same way that I guess when you think of, like Kansas is representative of the heartland of like America, like mainstream America, which is white. Like Harlem is like it's the center of black America.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, it also like in the movie, it's the center of the universe. It's like the place that you're trying to get back to. It's the place where you want to be. And it's like, it's the place where your family is. It's the place where love is. And I think it's so beautiful. Like if you think about also what Harlem was probably like in 1978, it was so beautiful to me that like they centered that as like this like wonderland full of like love and like happiness and like that warm feeling of, I mean, I'm saying home, which is like mm-hmm. a song from Liz, which is corny, but like, yeah, but like that warm feeling of home, like when so many people probably like on the news were not, you know what I'm saying? Like this is happening at the same time that Frank Lucas is around. Do you know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. it's not like, I appreciate the fact that like Black people were offered this piece of fantasy, but also that like the fantasy was kind of still framed within like everyday life. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It didn't have to happen like in, you know, like so far into the future, you know what I mean?
That it was hard to identify.
Yeah, that it, like that you feel like you couldn't, it wasn't necessarily something that you would feel part of, but something you could only see like in New Zealand where they shoot stuff like that. So that was my pick. Eric,
it's pretty good. Tough act to follow, but I will be showing you a clip that comes from the 1990 movie Mo' Better Blues. Yes. By Spike Lee, I must add that this is my number two favorite movie of all time, only second to Barry Gordy's The Last Dragon.
He gave a copy of that, you gave your copy. I talked to our boss about this the other day.
Yeah.
He gave him a copy of his DVD and was like, you must watch this.
I gave him, yeah, I actually gave it to him on Blu-ray and DVD, just in case. Because it's so excellent. But that's not why we're here today. We're here today to talk about Mo' Better Blues. Stars Denzel Washington as Bleak Gilliam. And in this particular clip, it actually comes from the end of the movie, so spoiler alert, but please go back and watch it. Denzel Washington is kind of chosen to leave behind his like dreams, frankly, of a career as a jazz musician and commit himself wholly to his partner, and potentially have a family. So this kind of comes like just after. So yeah, give it up for Mo' Better Blues. So I mean, to frame that clip a little bit more, like it's a really long montage, actually. If you've seen the movie, it starts from their wedding, shows like the birth of Miles in full detail, and takes you all the way through. Yeah,
I got it.
And takes you all the way through to the scene you saw there, which was kind of coming full circle a bit for Denzel Washington's character. And for me, like, when I first saw this, I come from single parent home, and it was always really difficult for me to like contextualize like what like family looks like, you know. Mm-hmm. It was just hard. Like, to be honest, we saw things like, you know, everybody watched Cosby Show and stuff like that. But it was really, really difficult for me to get those like little moments, the like walking to school, you know. Just sitting there while the baby crawls as if the baby hasn't been crawling, you know, like just like chasing them around in like on the playground, like all those things like really added this texture in my mind that I just really, really appreciated, and helped me think that maybe this was something that I wanted for myself one day. And I still find it to be not only that, but also just amazingly poetic, just set mm-hmm. to, you know, to this song by Miles Davis, Love Supreme. Like, it's just like kind of like tracking you throughout life, in a way that, frankly, we don't get to see Black life like that.
Yeah.
That often. Mm-hmm. So, you know, however you feel about Bleak through the first three quarters of the movie, you know, I won't say that, you know, he was a model for how one should behave, but like that montage to me is like as close as it comes to a perfect scene of film.
How is it? So I knew you for a while now, like 11 years. So I've known you since before, you know, you had a wife and you had a child, and this was still always your favorite movie. Second favorite. I'm sorry. Like, how is it different to watch that whole montage now that, like to put your business out there? Like, we just celebrated, you know, Baby Peanut's first birthday. Her party was on Saturday.
Yeah.
And it was, like, in your apartment, and she, like, she didn't blow out the candle. Yeah. She didn't understand. <the apartment. laughs> Next year. She actually didn't even want to eat the cake. Yeah. And kept trying to get her, and she was like, I don't know what this is. But like, what is it like to look at that montage now for you?
I mean, to be honest, the montage is so much longer in my mind now. Like, I see obviously what Spike put there, but now, like, I mean, I can only go but so far. I can't go all the way there, but I can feel out these other moments. And it feels like so much more real. And it also is very, like, it's very comforting now to watch, to think that it is aspirational in a sense, but it also just can be real, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I thought growing up that, like, that was a very big maybe, that I would have a family, and then my family look like that. They look, you know, they look middle class. Like, they look like they are happy. They don't look like they're kind of bothered or hindered by the things that, like, Black families are traditionally held down by. They just look like they are living and enjoying and focusing on their life and their family. And for me, that was aspirational, but now I also feel like it, you know, it's possible for me. that's kind of what I see now. And I'm hopeful that my life will continue to be as idyllic as it seems in that montage. But, you know, we'll see. So far, okay. I think next time should be able to blow out the candle.
I hope so.
Yeah, we're working on that. Walking first. But yeah, I'm curious, is there, like, the other pieces, I mean, I think about the Black family. I think about, like, the things that we look out for. Is there anything else that, like, pokes out to you as, like, a great example?
As for Black family?
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's so hard. Because growing up, it used to be, for me, like, Cosby Show.
Yeah.
But then it became, when I started to be a little bit, like, more of an adult and moved away from my family in Indiana, that, like, my mom has four sisters, and when my grandmother was alive, all of them lived in the same neighborhood. Like, not like just my mom and her sisters, but then, like, my grandma, and then also my mom's best friend, and then all, you know, like, so I grew up surrounded by family. And then I moved to go away to college, and I created sort of, like, I realized, like, I could create, like, friend families. Mm. And so when I realized, like, this thing that, like, friend families were possible, to me, the best family in, like, film or TV became the cast of Living Single. Because in that month, like, on that show, I was just like, oh my, like, that's family. Like, that's, you know, and I love my family's my family, and I love my family. But your chosen family is so specific, and, like, the dynamics and the chemistry have to be right, and, like, you know, it's different when someone's related to you, and you're just, like, when it's somebody who's a friend and they fail you, and you forgive, and you listen, and then you open your heart again, mm-hmm. it's just... And then they do right. It's just like, to me, like, that's just like one of the most beautiful things. And I feel like Black women specifically are so, so good at, like, Black girl magic, in my mind, is the divining of relationships between each other that are based on so much more than our gender and the color of our skin. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, like, that might be where we start, but it becomes something, like, beyond, just so strong. You know, I was telling my boyfriend on the way here, I was looking at my phone, like, okay, which way do I go? And there was a Black officer at the crosswalk, and she saw me, and she stopped, and she said, hey, where are you trying to go? Let me help you. Like, and I was like, oh, I'm, you know, actually I can see it, you know, in here or whatever. And she was like, okay, cool. You know, whatever. And then Kelly was like, what'd she say to you? And I was like, it's a whole thing. Like, I don't know how to, like, she didn't say much, but it was like that look, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, and I was like, I can't even, I love you, but it's a thing. Like, let's just go. We already late.
So on that note, I think we should actually transition to your clip.
Yeah, okay. My clip comes from the 1993 film, What's Love Got to Do With It? Starring Angela Bassett and Lauren Fishburne.
from St. Luke, Ike and Tina Turner singing their new song, Fool in Love. Somebody please tell me what's wrong.
You're just a fool, you know you're in love.
What you say?
You just a reason to live.
Okay. You need to give us some.
All right. A little bit of context.
Yes.
For that scene, I mean, most people know like the Ike and Tina story, but the particular thing around that scene is that right before they went on stage, Tina, who had like recently given birth, like way recently, felt like she was too sick, and like she gave birth, they immediately went back on the road. She didn't feel good at all, and she was like, I don't think I can do this. I'm sorry. And, you know, and then there's the, you know, Ike line, like, yeah, you sorry, about the sorriest motherfucker I ever seen. And then he leaves. Like, he's terrible. He's a terrible man. But that scene when, like, first of all, I saw this in the theater. And I was, like, 6. Yeah. My grandmother didn't give a solitary fuck. She was like... She was like, I don't like going to the movies by myself. I'm about to pull you out of kindergarten early. And you're going to come see it with me. So I went to go see this movie. But that, it was ingrained in my mind, this, like, Angela Bassett, who the fact that to this day Angela Bassett doesn't have a Best Actress Academy Award for something is insane. But, y'all know, but that scene, like her just standing there, like almost catatonic, and him kissing her, and the like, and it's like this moment of the kiss and that single tear coming down her face, and then the singing starts. And I just, like, I grew up in a, like a family where my mom... My brother and I watched a lot of TV, a lot of movies. We were only 14 months apart, kind of acted like twins. But my mother was very encouraging of us play acting. And for many years, I thought I wanted to be an actress. I don't. Now that I like, now that I know what they go through, I have no desire to do it. But my brother and I used to like act out scenes from movies all the time. And my mom would just like laugh and like, she would tell us, you forgot this line. It goes like this. We'd be like, oh yeah, yeah, wait, we'll do it over. We'll do it over. And then we'd do it over. And it was like this fun thing. And I didn't really realize, I don't even think at the time, like I definitely realized that Ike was a mean man, but I don't think I understood what it meant to be like in relationship with a man who treats you badly because I was 6. But then as I got older, you know, like this movie sort of like for me, like it became completely like Ike was like an afterthought. It was all about Tina and it was all about her strength and it was all about like her talent and beauty and drive. And, you know, like it sucked that she had to get to like that breaking point. And like, I can still picture her in that all white suit running across a highway, you know, and walking into the hotel room and them giving her a room. Because despite the fact that she's Tina Turner, she has nothing. She has no money. She has nothing on her. And she just wants to be free and she just wants to get away. And yeah, that movie just represented for me like a level of like, you only have to take so much from a person. And love doesn't look like that. Mm-hmm. So when someone says, I love you, or I need you, or you need me, but they treat you like that, those two things don't work together. They don't mix. And I feel like there are a lot of bad situations I avoided just in life because of representations like that where I was like, no, I see you coming. And when I see crazy coming, I'd cross the street.
2014.
So, yeah.
So I don't want to cut off conversation, but I know we're slowly running out of time. So I want to make sure we get to your clip, Aaron.
Yes.
All right. So my clip is from the 1997 music video for it's much different.
Not really.
For The Rain, Super Duper Fly.
Yeah.
By Missy Elliott. And as you all remember, it is the first single from her very first album.
Huh. The legend.
Me, I'm super fly, super duper fly, super duper fly. Me, I'm super fly, super duper fly, super duper fly.
I know you want more.
Can't play the whole video, y'all.
So, my sister's 3 years younger than me. And we used to get my dad's hefty garbage bags. You had to get the ones for the leaves because they were just light enough to blow up, but not too heavy, right? But they wouldn't burst. And we had these little fans, these little battery-operated fans. And we would... I found a way to rig them up so I could blow the garbage bags up with the fans, and me and my sister would walk around the house until the batteries died. Like the Super Duper Fly video. When it came out, I was not even 9 years old. I was going on 9 that December. And I had been reading a little bit about, you know, science fiction. I'd seen science fiction in the movies. Up until that point, you know, I had some really... you know, fun movies and stuff I enjoyed. I'm not even sure exactly how I was allowed to see the video. I think my grandmother, again, she
what is up with grandma? Yes,
I was gonna say,
my parents didn't let me watch BET, but my grandma, she did. And I, as a Southern black kid, I spent maybe half my life at my grandmother's. And so I watched BET, I watched this, and it was revolutionary for me. And that's one of the only things I can actually remember from my childhood going back that far was the Super Duper Fly video, was the garbage bags, was watching this vision of the future that I had never thought about before, a future not only with black people, but where black people were like the only vision in that future. It was incredible to me. You know, I'd been seeing, you know, shit like Puff the Magic Dragon, you know, fantasy shit that's not like where you don't see any black people at all. So similar to your point about The Wiz, this was me watching for the first time. So I hadn't seen The Wiz yet then. For the first time, it was me watching the construction of an Afrofuturistic world through a 3-minute, 45-second video.
A great video.
A great video. And also being introduced to Missy and Timberland. But
also life-changing.
Also life-changing.
Life-changing.
Yeah,
also Southern.
Southern, yeah. The Southern,
then they
as
got
a
together
Southerner,
with Total.
Watching this stuff that was like very Southern and watching this future and also watching a black woman who was leading her own, like who wasn't the R&B singer attached to the song, who was the song. Mm-hmm. And that was also something that was amazing to me to watch as a kid. And every time anybody asked me what's my favorite music video, what's my favorite, you know, you asked me this and I thought it almost immediately. It was Super Duper Fly. It was garbage bags.
How long did that last? Like, how long does like a battery operated fan in a garbage bag last?
Those things can go about 2 hours.
That's like 6 years if you're 8.
But I was in very, very rural North Carolina with my grandmother. So we had to walk like maybe a mile to get batteries. So we would buy, you know, a pack of four and...
Whole day's fun.
A day of fun and get up at 6 and walk a mile and back to get more batteries.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, we were gonna answer some questions, but we actually are like...
Run out of time.
Out of time.
Sorry.
I know, we're sad too.
But that means you have to come back to the next one. Oh, do we have time for questions?
Well,
all right. Let's see.
Oh, we could ask, we could answer one question, I guess.
Sure.
Which one do you want to answer? We can answer that question.
Okay.
You should read it.
Sure.
It'd be dumb.
All right, so quick question.
Who's it from?
This is from Nika T. Knight on Twitter, at Nika T. Knight. She asks, Brittany, have you started writing more since your last episode with Ashley?
Okay, so for those of you who missed the episode with Ashley, I said that I got into podcasting because writing was too hard. Just much easier to talk about nothing with you. And it worked out.
Yeah.
But yeah, actually, I did. I wrote one thing. I don't have time to write anything else, but I wrote one thing. And it was about infidelity. And nice. It was about lemonade. And it was about...
Okay, it's really good.
And it's
really
good. I could just say lemonade. I feel like I could just say lemonade. Knows. Beyonce. I'm just going to keep saying keywords just to, like, get applause. But yeah, no, I did write. I did write one thing, and it was on Refinery 29. It was actually cool because they actually reached out to me. And she was like, oh, based upon your tweets. And I tweet about nothing except for, like, crying the last time I got fitted for a bra. Like, I tweet about family conference calls. Like, tweet about Chipotle. Like, I don't really tweet about anything. So she was like, you know, based upon your tweets, I really think that you should write a story about Beyonce and infidelity the day after Lemonade came out. And I was like, yeah, okay. Actually, no, you were on vacation. I normally would have asked you because I would have been like, no, actually, I'm very busy. I kind of am. But then I was like, if Eric comes back and I tell him that this happened and I didn't do it, you would have been pissed off. So yeah, I did it. And it wasn't, I didn't die.
And it's actually a really fantastic essay.
Yeah. It's really, really good.
Y'all read it? Yeah. I knew you read it. Hey,
I am plugged in for all Lemonade stuff.
No, of course I read it.
Well, shoot. That's all we got.
I think that's all the time we have.
We want to thank a couple people, though.
Yes, yes. We'd like to thank The Green Space.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, seriously. Because we would not have been able to do this without them. So that's Ellen Rofes, Jennifer Sendro, the wonderful staff, Ricardo, Fernando, thank you so much.
Yes. We'd also like to thank our guests.
Yes.
Thank you so much. Let's give a round of
applause. Yes, thank you, Ashley. And also our DJ
yes.
Grandrew.
Yes. And we'd like to lastly just thank all of our listeners and everyone who got tickets. We know, you know, for me, $15 is a lot.
a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, for most, maybe.
Yeah.
But we really, really appreciate you all coming out tonight. It means more to us than we could, like, ever really, really explain.
This is like, you don't understand. Like, literally, we used to sit in Eric's house while, like, people were shouting in the streets.
Ambulances
going by. We would drink the first couple episodes. So, like, they don't make any sense. And, like, we would leave, like, Eric's bathroom door open behind me. So it just sounded like we were shouting into a trash can. But. Yeah. Y'all stuck with us.
And we appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
So just to reiterate, as we always do, we very much appreciate it if you went to iTunes.
Yes. This is an episode, y'all.
Yes. And left us a review.
Yes.
5 stars, maybe.
5 stars only.
And continue to tell your friends, like, please spread the word. You know, if you like what you have seen or heard, tell somebody else about it.
Right. And if you enjoyed this live show, you should just continue to beg as many 200 to 500 seat venues as possible to ask us for another.
Before we go, we should also, like, Ashley, would you like to tell people where they can find you?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. On Twitter, I'm iSmashFizzle. If
you want to spell that,
it's phonetic. It's just I smash fizzle, like just how it sounds. It's a combination of two nicknames that I had in college. Don't worry about it. I think that's it. Oh, and Tumblr smash fizzle, Instagram smash fizzle. You can follow me a bunch of places. I mean, I don't really be doing shit, like, except just like a talking.
Black ass lie, but
just talking. But yeah.
You can find me on Twitter at 5fifths. Don't forget that F and fifths, or you get somewhere else that's not great. You cannot find me on Facebook. Don't.
Don't find you?
Yeah, don't find me on Facebook. And you can also find me on at The Atlantic. Not right there.
Yeah.
A
little bit.
Maybe on there.
Maybe on there. Sometimes.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you guys again. This was great. This was like, I mean, I'm saying this was great. I was sitting here. That's so I'm biased. That's so leading.
I liked it too.
But I'll,
But
hopefully
thanks.
Hopefully all this. And yeah, thank you so much. And I guess we will we'll talk to you guys soon.
We'll
it's weird.
Normally
we're just in a room, like a white box by ourselves.
We hit a button.
And we're just kind of like, all right, bye. But like, y'all are here. You're still looking at us.
But
so it's different.
We'll see you later. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 bacon bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the bacon cheese slider, 1921 bacon cheese slider, or chicken bacon ranch slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 bacon bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.